If you will, take out your Bibles and open up to Psalm 3, the third psalm in the Old Testament. I'm not going to set this up like a lesson where we slowly build and kind of get to the end and kind of unwrap the surprise and see the things that are there. Tonight what I want to do is tell you the exact point of what we're going through the whole lesson. Of course, the title of the lesson is The Champion Slayer's Point. We're going to, of course, look at the story of David and Goliath tonight. And I want you to see the point of the story in the eyes of David himself. And you'll notice it at least two or three times. The problem with the nation of Israel when David is going out to fight against Goliath is that Israel does not believe that God is with them. They don't necessarily believe that God is anywhere around where they are. Saul is already at the point we're going to look at. He is already devoid of the Spirit of God. God's removed it from him. He's already starting to have these evil spirits that are coming around. At the tail end of the chapter before what we're going to look at tonight, David is called upon to play the harp to soothe and to kind of ward off these spirits that Saul is having come upon him. The whole point of this is to show, in the story of David and Goliath, David's big point is God is living and he is here with us. That is what he goes after, and you'll see it several times as we go through the story. It's kind of something, though, that for me, from my childhood, when I heard this story, I thought it was about slings, and I thought it was about giants, and I thought it was about all kinds of heavy armor and all kinds of fun stuff like that. Good story. But there's so much more to it. Of course, the next chapter after, basically, whenever they're coming back after Goliath's been killed, kind of there's this, almost gives you the hint of a victor's parade. And the ladies are singing a song, and they say, Saul has killed his thousands, David has killed his 10,000s, which really made Saul real, real happy. Of course not. It made him angry. It made him upset. It even made him look at David kind of with a cocked eye and kind of made him a little bit not so sure about David, like he really didn't even want him around. But I want you to see David's heart here. Specifically, we're going to start here in Psalm 3, and I want you to see how he responds. Now, this psalm is probably written way down the line from the story that we're going to look at tonight. But I just want you to see David's point of view. In Psalm 3, look down at verse 6. Now, this psalm is written when he's fleeing from Absalom, his own son, who's trying to kill him and take over the kingdom. In verse 6, David says, I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about. Who in their right mind would not be scared to death to be surrounded by 10,000 people who want to destroy you? That doesn't sound like somebody who's sane to us. But he says, I'm not going to be afraid of 10,000s of people. He says, even if they've set themselves against me round about, even if I'm surrounded, that doesn't bother me. Why? Why would you think that way, David? Verse 7. He says, Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you have smitten all my enemies on the cheek. You have shattered the teeth of the wicked. He says, because God, I know you're with me. He says, that's why I'm not afraid. David is not a warrior that says, I'm not afraid because I'm strong and mighty. He doesn't say, hey, look at my muscles. He doesn't say, hey, look at how good I am at fighting. He says, I want you to look at my God. That's the one I want you to pay attention to. He says, you take a look at him and you see if there's anything to be afraid of when he's with you. The picture goes on here. He says, hey, you've smitten all my enemies on the cheek. Now you hear smitten, maybe you hear striking, maybe you think in your mind, you know, a slap across the cheek. But I want you to notice how how hard this slap is. Because look at the rest of the verse. You have shattered the teeth of the wicked. You ever been hit so hard on the jaw that it knocked out your teeth? You ever been hit in the face so hard that it shattered your teeth? David's not saying, God, maybe you can get us through this. He's saying, God, I'm waiting on you to stand up and you'll take care of it all. And I'm standing with you. And he's always pointing Israel, say, look at the Lord. Look at him. He's got more than enough strength to take care of any problem we have. Now, knowing that this is David, and this is the way he sees things, I want you to go back now. I want you to kind of notice. Look back at the passage that was read before in 1 Samuel chapter 17. Looking at the story of David and Goliath. Whenever the story begins, the setting is given away in these first two verses of 1 Samuel 17. Basically, there's a valley scene. And on the mountains that are on the east side is where the Philistines are. The mountains that are on the west side is where the nation of Israel is, and they've all gathered together in battle array. And, by the way, this is pretty well normal for the times. This is about the way that they would fight. In the spring, they would go out to war, and now here they are. They can kind of see, and the generals are kind of perched up on these mountains so that the idea was that they could give trumpet sounds and things to their armies and watch them move across the valley and see every move along the way. It was an ideal spot for war, if you wanted to think that way. It'd be kind of like playing a scene, and you'd be able to see everything on the field. We would probably compare it to maybe a skybox view in some stadium or arena. I mean, you could see everything unfold and how it should go and what you wanted your armies to do. So they all gather together. They're set up on these two sides. If you look at verse 2, it says, Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. They come out. Here it is. And it's the Philistines' land. I want you to kind of think of it that way. Now, God says it should be the Israelite land if they would just stand up for the Lord, but they haven't done that. And if you want to take another thought, it's called the land of Palestine by most people. And that's kind of an augmentation of the term Philistine. You can maybe hear Philistine, but the H got dropped, so it turned into Palestine. It was known that much as their land, if that makes sense. Then, I want you to notice verse 3. He says, The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with the valley between them. Here it is laying out. Verse 4. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath, from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in a span. Notice it doesn't just call him a valiant warrior. No, it doesn't just call him somebody who is really strong. He says, he is a champion. In other words, this is not his first fight. This is what he's done perhaps all of his life. For the Philistines, they trained warriors from a very, very young age. Here he is. He's a champion. He's destroyed other champions. That's what he does. And then, of course, it gives you a little idea about his height. It says 6 cubits in a span. Cubit is roughly 16 inches. A span is half a cubit, so another 9. If you want to do the math in your head, you're going to come up with a guy that's about 9 foot 9 inches tall. Now, if you can see the tip of my finger, from the floor to the tip of my finger is about 10 feet. Come down about 3 inches, and that's about how tall Goliath is. Now, we got some tall people here, but they all look really, really small compared to that. Whenever you start to realize that somebody who's 6 foot tall is not even 70% as tall as Goliath is, how does it look? Physically, it looks like, well, why would you ever go out and fight that guy? Well, notice a little bit more of this. And I want you to kind of give the idea, cubits aren't an exact science. It's really the idea of a distance between your elbow and your forefinger. And so they use it in selling fabric and materials. So if you went down to the marketplace to buy some fabric, you would want to find somebody who had a really long arm span from their elbow to the tip of their finger. But you'd probably find a whole lot more little old ladies who were selling, and they can make a whole lot more money than those tall fellas. So the idea of a cubit does give a little bit of idea of range. I mean, he could have been, if you want to put it this way, he could have been as small as about 8'6". If you can really call that small. But just to give you an idea. Look at verse 5. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, a coat of mail, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. That probably doesn't mean a whole lot to you, 5,000 shekels of bronze. 125 pounds. How many of you would like to go out and fight a battle carrying anything that weighed 125 pounds? I don't think any of us would. We'd say, forget that. That'll kill me by itself. Here's Goliath. He says, you know what? my scale armor is 125 pounds. It's like nothing to me. Then he notices it keeps on going, verse 6. He also had bronze graves on his legs, kind of look like, if you've ever seen soccer players, ever seen shin guards, that's about what they look like. They're bronze. He says, and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. Here it is, kind of carrying it on his back. Verse 7. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam. When you talk about a weaver's beam, you're talking about something that is as long as the widest, if you want to call it blanket, or some kind of Afghan or shawl, if you want to think of it that way. It had to be the distance, and longer than the distance, of the width of what you're trying to sew. So you're talking about something that's really long. If you think about it on your bed, it's going to be wider than your bed is. He says, that's just the beam. Now look at the next part. He says, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. 600 shekels of iron, and maybe if you have a newer translation, the conservative idea is 15 pounds. There's other ideas that say it was 25 pounds. We'll stick with 15. You want to know about how much that shot put weighs they use in the Olympics? That little ball made of, I don't know what it's made of exactly, but here it is. It weighs 16 pounds. The world record is to throw it 75 feet. 75 feet is the distance from the foot of the step to the clock. We all know where the clock is in the back. He says, it's about that long, 75 feet. You think you could throw 15 pounds 75 feet? If you do, you should enter the Olympics. They're coming up. But the idea is, if you want something to compare it to, you want to go home and have a tough man test, take 2 gallons of water, put them both in one hand, grab them by the handle, and see how far you can throw them together. Think you're going to get anywhere close? Because the idea is, this is the tip of his spear. If you can throw spears and they barely travel, it's pretty easy to get out of the way. So he's hoisting this thing pretty fast, and he can do it pretty long. All these details are kind of those shock statistics to tell you, oh, what a champion. That's the point of the telling here. Then he goes on and he says, and his shield carrier also walked before him. Like, and by the way, there's somebody before him before he ever gets to you. You got to get through that guy first. Now, notice through all of this, it kind of tells you all these details to impress us, which kind of tells you, kind of gives you a little bit of way in the story. Because if they have all these details and they know how much everything weighs, that must mean that he died, because there's no other way to weigh it. He's not just yelling this stuff out. Notice the next part, verse 8. It says, he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, why do you come out to draw up in battle array? He says, why are you even out here? He says, am I not the Philistine and your servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. You kind of imagine Goliath standing in the bottom of the valley and saying, just pick somebody and come out and let's fight. I'm ready to go at it. Then the next verse, verse 9, says, if he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants in service. He kind of says, let's do this a little bit more maturely. He says, why should we all have servants that are maimed because they got hurt in battle? Let's just have 2 guys kind of represent each country, and then whoever wins, everybody else will be their servants. Everything will just kind of work out a little bit easier that way. Won't have to have so many people die. It'll be a little bit easier to clean up. And he says, let's just do it that way. And of course, here he is yelling out these rants and these shouts through all of these things, finally to come down and to say, verse 10, again the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. I want you to notice how Saul and the Israelites respond. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. They're thinking, it's over. The moment that guy crosses over the bottom, we're done. There's no power we can draw off of to make anything work. They're scared to death. And if you notice, look down at verse 16. The Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand. 40 days. Over 6 weeks worth. Every morning he would come out and do this. Every night he would come out and do this. Here's something I want you to take note of. The Philistines never say, you know, Goliath, maybe you shouldn't make this challenge this way, because you know, if you do lose, we're going to be servants for the rest of our lives. You notice that the Philistines don't have anything like that? Because they are saying, Goliath's our man. We got plenty of good servants now because of what he's done like this. They say, if you can beat him, we'll be your servant. You kind of see him sitting back and kind of popping out their collar and saying, you know, that guy looks pretty strong. He'd be pretty good for carrying water. Almost like maybe they're picking out their servants before the thing happens. 40 days and 40 nights. They heard this taunt, this rant, 80 times. 80 times. I want you to look a little bit further down. Look at verse 20. David's father Jesse sends some things with him to take to battle, even to his three older brothers that are there, the three oldest brothers. And so he brings these things out to them, and he comes to even give things to their commanders, the commanders of thousands. Verse 20 says, so David arose early in the morning and left the flock with a keeper, that's the sheep his father's herd. He says, and took the supplies and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. Isn't that kind of interesting? After 40 days and 40 nights, they're still shouting the war cry when they go out. And yet, there hasn't been any fighting going on yet. Seems a little odd. Verse 21. Israel and the Philistines drew up an army in battle array, army against army. Then David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. He goes to look out his brothers. He doesn't care that they're already in their attire and they're ready to go to war. He goes up to say, hey, I'm here. I brought you some things, which I'm sure they would appreciate, you would think. Then, verse 23, as he was talking with them, behold, the champion. Notice now it doesn't just say a champion. Now it says the champion, almost as if to say, this is the guy. You're not going to find anybody better. The Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words as David heard them. He says them again. But this is the first time out of all those times that David hears what's being said. Then verse 24. When all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. Notice all of them. That even includes David's older brothers. All of them. They're terrified. Verse 25. The men of Israel said, have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel, and it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. He says, the king is ready for anybody who's willing to step up and go out against the champion. He says, the king's going to do a couple things for you. Number one, you're going to be part of the royal family because you're going to marry the king's daughter. Number two, you don't have to pay any more taxes, or your family doesn't have to pay any more taxes for the rest of their existence. That'd be pretty nice. He says, all you have to do is go out and fight against him and kill him. That's it. Pretty good deal. If you're not scared and afraid. Then, verse 26. I want you to hear what David says. Listen to the point of what he's going after here. Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him. Now, here's this taunt. These men have heard this about 80 times. This first time David's heard it. And now here are these men who are standing around him, and look at his response. What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? Do you notice what David says? Who does this guy think he is? You want to know what the rest of those Israelites are thinking? Have you seen his spear? Have you seen the coat of mail that he wears, his armor? Have you seen how tall he is? Have you seen what he looks like? That's what they're looking at. David doesn't say that. David says, who does this guy think he is that he can taunt the armies of the living God? Huh. You kind of wonder, what those guys around him think? Kid, you just don't know. You don't see it, do you? Just running off your mouth. Look at the next verse, verse 27. The people answered him in accord with this word, saying, thus it will be done for the man who kills him. I mean, they just lay it out for him again. They say, here's what it'll be. Then the next couple of verses, his own brothers say, well, what'd you come up here for? Just to taunt, just to kind of see the show of what's going to take place? That's his three older brothers. Look down at verse 31. They hear what David says. It says, when the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. Word got to Saul that there was one person who said, who's this guy think he is to taunt the armies of the living God? And as soon as Saul hears word that there's somebody saying that, he sends for David. Now here's what's kind of interesting. David had already been a guy that had played the harp in front of Saul. But now he sends for him. And if we read further on, which we're not going to get to, Saul doesn't even know what family he comes from until after it's all over. Look as it continues, verse 32. Here's the conversation between the current king and the future king. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. David says, I'll go. Now, David's never described as some humongous giant. He's described with a lot of things. But he's not described as somebody who's bulging in strength. Although that's probably the way we think of him. He says, I'll go. I'll fight him. 40 days and 40 nights, nobody had stepped forward to say that. Because they were all scared to death. Because they were looking at the wrong things. They were looking at the armor. They were looking at the spear. They were looking at the helmet. Looking at the shield. Then, verse 33. Then Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth. He says, you're just a kid. You can't go. He says, I can't do that to your family. He says, you're too young. This guy's been training ever since he was a kid. And you're still a kid. You don't even have a shot. Which tells you what Saul's looking at. Saul's looking at the armor too. He's not looking at the living God. Verse 34. But David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. I want you to see something about David. If you notice, he says, this lion or this bear came and took one of the sheep of his father's flock and took the sheep away from the flock. And David doesn't just go, whew, thank goodness he didn't come after me. He says, he took one of my dad's sheep, and so I'm going to have to go after him. And David actually goes and chases down this lion or bear, grabs him by the beard. I mean, you talk about getting close. He doesn't just say, you know, I'll sling a stone and maybe I can get close and I won't have to get, you know, be a little bit farther away. I can just hit him. He says, I'm going to get right up on him. I'm going to grab him by the beard and I'm going to kill him. Because the Lord's with me. Not because of how great I am. He says, and he struck him and killed him. Just that simple. Look at verse 36. I want you to notice what David brings up again. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, which goes to tell you it was two different times, not just one. He says, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them. He says, he'll be just like them. Here's why. Since he has taunted the armies of the living God. He says, we're not like those pagans. We don't serve some God that can't hear, can't see, can't talk, can't think, can't breathe. He says, our God is living. And our God can destroy him with no problem. David doesn't care about armor. David doesn't care about him being 9 foot, 9 inches tall. He doesn't care that he's been doing this for 40 days. He doesn't care that he's defeated all the other champions of the other nations around. He says, you're not going to talk that way about the living God and live. You'll be just like that lion and that bear. And you got to kind of imagine for Saul, you're just a kid. But boy, you talk big. Verse 37. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and may the Lord be with you. He says, okay, kid, go get him. says, you go do it. Now, I want you to kind of imagine, here's all these members of the army of Israel. And if David loses, they're all servants. They're all slaves. Notice as it continues. Verse 38. Then Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with armor. He starts to put on all of this battle array. He starts to put on all these things that man says will protect you. And he ends up just basically saying, no thanks. I don't want them. You know, Saul's really shaking his head now. Oh, kid. Come on. You got to take something. He says, well, it doesn't fit. It's not for me. And David takes it all off. Then, look at verse 40. He took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag which he had, even in his pouch, and his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. He says, you know what I'm going to take? I'm going to take a stick. I'm going to take 5 smooth stones from probably the Ella Brook. He says, and I'm going to put them in the shepherd's bag that I got with me. And I put them in my pouch. And I'll take my sling with me, which is just 2 strips of hide with a bigger piece of hide maybe in the middle. Don't worry, there's no rubber in it. And he says, that'll be enough. That's it. I got enough. Okay. I got the Lord with me. I don't have to fear anything. Then, verse 41. Then the Philistine came on and approached David with the shield bearer in front of him. Finally, everything kind of comes to a head. You have David on one side, and we're going to see here in a moment, Goliath is already standing in the bottom in the valley. And here everything is on the line. All the armies are paying attention because their future is hanging in the balance. Verse 42, when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. Goliath says, oh, you sent me a pretty boy. He says, man, he's handsome. He says, man, he's kind of got a red complexion. He's ruddy. He says, and he's just a kid. He says, boy, this is going to be easy. No problem. Verse 43. The Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. He just really starts to lay it on thick. He just taunts him. He says, oh, you brought a stick with you, huh? Well, that's something. Never seen that one before. And he would never see it again. Verse 44. And the Philistine also said to David, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. He says, oh, just come on down. Let's get this over with. I've been waiting 40 days for this. Verse 45. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. See where David puts his strength? It's not about I got a bigger stick than you do. It's not about I got better tools or better armor or any of that stuff. He says, the reason I'm coming to you is not with a sword, it's not with a javelin, it's not with a spear, it's not with a shield. He says, I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord. And because you've taunted us, that's why I'm coming. Then, verse 46, David continues, this day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down or move your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Once again, David comes back to his main point. He says, the reason you're going to die today is because God's going to show that he is with Israel. And that's why you're going to die. And that's why your armies are going to die. You see David's point? David's not doing this so that he can get a great name and that he can be the king's son-in-law and that his family won't have to pay taxes. He's doing this to say, Israel, you need to know that there's a living God in Israel with us. Because apparently nobody else believed that. Notice the second thing he says. Look as it continues. Verse 47. and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear. He says, it's not about who has the best tools. It's not about who has the best weapons. It's about who God is with. He says, all this assembly, guess who that includes? Not just the Philistines, but those of Israel. Then, he says, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. Notice David doesn't say, because I'm good with throwing rocks, you're going to be mine. He says, it's because God fights the battle for us. And even in our weakness, he can use that to his strength. If you notice the statement, he says, I want everybody to know that there is a God in Israel. And I want everybody to know that the battle's in the hands of the Lord. And God doesn't deliver with sword and spear. For those of Israel that were watching David go down without a sword and without a spear, they were thinking, I hope he's right. Because they didn't have any faith that God was with them. But they sure hoped he was right. Look at the next statement, verse 48. Then it happened. Enough of the talking. Now it's time to get down to it. Then it happened when the Philistine rose. You notice he was sitting down during all this? And came and drew near to meet David, that David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. Do you notice you don't see David kind of backing off? He's got enough faith in the Lord and what he can do. He runs at Goliath. And I want you to keep in mind, have you ever run down a hill? I mean, your legs really get a moving. He is running out and going down the hill at the same time, and he's really, he could probably break a world record there. Then, verse 49, as he's running quickly toward Goliath, and David put his hand into his bag and took from it a stone. He takes one. We know he has five. I wonder why he took five. I don't know. That's kind of a question there. He took one stone, he put it in the sling, and he slung it. And I want you to realize that these stones come out about the same speed as a rifle bullet. Don't think of it like those little things you see in the stores with rubber and stuff. These things get up some pretty top velocity if you've ever seen anything about them. How accurate do you think you could be? Well, in the Old Testament, there's 700 men who are left-handed who are talked about as being pretty accurate. Here he is. It says, and struck the Philistine on his forehead, and the stone sank into his forehead. Not only did he hit him, it actually sunk in and crushed part of his skull. And it probably hit his brain. And I want you to notice the way it describes it. He says, and killed him, but there was no sword in David's hand. No swords. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. It was over. Something else I want you to kind of take note. It talks about that whenever the champion fell, he falls forward. He's coming down, and as David hits him, he falls flat on his face. You want to know how much armor he has on his back? None. David grabs his sword, cuts off his head, and all those Philistines go out of their mind, and they start running away. Israel, in return, takes faith, and they go and chase all of them down, except for a handful. You look at this story, and we think, man, what an amazing story. God using somebody who's young, God using somebody who's inexperienced to slay the champion. But David's whole point in this slaying of the champion is not, hey, look at me, I'm strong. It's, hey, Israel, look around and notice that God's here and that the battle belongs to him, not us. And sometimes we need to take that to mind too in the church. We need to consider, you know, maybe our numbers might not be as big as some other places. Maybe here we are, we think, you know, I wasn't raised knowing a lot about the Bible, but here I am. I'm kind of weak here. We might think, well, you know what, I haven't I haven't studied the Bible very long. And here's kind of the lesson that says, you are just the people God is looking for if you will just look to Him, if you will just trust in Him. Don't be like the Israelites who looked at all the shiny brass and the big 15-pound spearhead and how good it looked. Know that God can use people as long as they work off of faith, as long as they will put trust in the Lord, even when everything physically looks like it's against you. You trust in Him, and giants fall. That's just the way it works. You trust in Him, everything will be taken care of. And sometimes, like David, he gets to be an example to all of Israel to show what faithfulness looks like, even when you're just a kid. Take that to mind. The next time you come up against something that you think, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can be faithful in this situation. Think about David. You hold to the Lord, put faith in the Lord, giants fall. And they fall flat on their face.